Welcome to The Disappearing Mind, a unique podcast helping you find clarity and support along your dementia journey. Now, join National Dementia Trainer and Coach, Dawn Platt, for an all-new episode.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia 24/7 365. I've traveled across the country and lectured around this topic for many years. Now I'm stepping from behind the podium because I want a seat in the audience and a chance to hear your heart and voice as much as you hear mine. I want to know your stories, help you find answers, and help you to rediscover all the beautiful memories worth keeping. Today, I'm going to be addressing some real questions from a real conversation I recently had during a dementia coaching session. I had a conversation with a gentleman named Jim. Jim has been married for 50 years. Jim had a lot of questions regarding his wife, who now has mid-level dementia. We don't really know what type because she hasn't gotten a diagnosis yet. Today, we're going to talk about that during our podcast, and I hope that you will get something out of this podcast today. Before I get started, there are a couple stories that I'm going to tell, and I like storytelling. You need to know that about me. I'm going to talk a little bit about some common early symptoms of dementia so that you have an overview of what might be happening or what you might expect if you have someone you know, a friend or a loved one, who has dementia. So let's get going. So some common early symptoms of dementia. There are different types of dementia that we see that can affect people differently. Everyone will experience symptoms in their own way. Dementia relates to a person's ability to function and how their brain functions. So it may be different than they once did. Think of it as a gradual, progressive brain damage that causes a disease and that changes one's power to think and to interact with the world. Perhaps judgment, decision-making, all of those things can change when it comes to dementia. Usually, it's about the middle stage of dementia, where individuals begin suffering from a loss of abstract thinking. And it progresses as the dementia progresses. They begin to lose some mental capacity to connect with past experiences and the knowledge to apply them with current situations. What does that look like? Or what am I talking about? Some of the early symptoms can range from confusion, difficulties with problem solving, the inability to multitask or react as they might have prior to having dementia. Some of the early symptoms that may appear, and I say may appear because they don't all appear. Again, we're individuals and we can have dementia differently. Even before a diagnosis comes about, these are some of the things that we might see with someone who has dementia. Number one would be being confused about time and place, having some memory loss. Usually short-term memory or things that have recently happened will be the first things that people tend to forget. Mood changes can be very common with dementia, difficulty concentrating, difficulty processing things. So all of those things have to do with brain function. Let's talk about some of the things that I think it's hard for people to understand, especially if it's a loved one that has been very intellectual and now all of a sudden they're having a hard time grasping things that are pretty common to them or you've seen them do a million times. So they may find it hard to carry out familiar daily tasks, such as getting confused when giving the correct change or paying for something when they've done that their whole life. Check writing. That can become very difficult for some people. Even things as simple as following a recipe. Perhaps your mother or grandmother has made a popular dish in your family, and now they can't even follow the recipe or remember it without reading it. Perhaps they're getting lost when driving home or going to the grocery store. Those are things that are pretty common. including struggling to follow a conversation or what we call word-finding difficulties. These are symptoms that are often mild and get worse very gradually. The term in the early stages is usually called MCI, or mild cognitive impairment. These are symptoms not really severe enough to be diagnosed as dementia, but there are changes happening. And those changes usually began to happen pretty early on. People around them may not notice these symptoms. If they have them, they certainly notice them. But as they grow gradually, family and friends begin to notice more things that are occurring. And some people, these symptoms will remain the same and not worsen. That's called MCI. But others have MCI and will go on to develop dementia. I think the national statistic for that is about 20% go in the next few years and develop full-blown dementia. So it's not a natural part of aging, dementia. This is why it's important to talk to your physician as soon as you notice any kind of symptoms that you're not sure about. Get a screening. If you're worried about any memory problems or other symptoms you're having, it's a good time to go and get it checked out so you can have an idea of what's happening, or you can catch it early and make some steps in your life to bring change about and preserve your memory, preserve your cognition. So today we're going to have some real questions that I really am excited to talk about. I love talking with families, caregivers, about their loved one that has dementia. It's the real stuff, and it's stuff that we're going to talk about on a regular basis on this podcast. Before I get into that, I do want to kind of tell you a little story so that you understand kind of where I'm coming from. And I always like to share stories just to relate to my audience and relate to people who have a loved one or a friend with dementia. I was recently in a conversation with a healthcare professional who is not a dementia expert, but certainly has worked in the field of dementia for a number of years. This person shared with me, and I'm going to call her Sue today. She shared with me that she was really concerned and that her husband is getting near retirement age. However, he's still working and working actively. He is a supervisor and he has a pretty big job. He oversees a lot of employees and he oversees, I think, some kind of warehouse or something like that. I'm not really sure about that. But one of the things she said to me, which really made me stop and think, and that's why I want to share it with you. She felt he was experiencing some confusion, some forgetfulness, and was maybe showing early signs of dementia. And what was so interesting is as she began to share with me, he has been losing credit cards. He's been forgetting appointments. He has not really been as sharp as he had once been. And so she really was pressing in to kind of get a diagnosis. Here's the issue, and here's what we want to talk about as we go through our podcast. I encouraged her to get a diagnosis, but I also encouraged her to really take a look at the situation. Her husband's still working. He still is able to be a supervisor and a professional. I asked her about his health problems. He is a diabetic and a brittle diabetic on insulin. They've been working on his health problems and even got a monitor so that he could know where his blood sugars were. Since doing that, he has gotten better and decreased his insulin level. With that, his confusion has lessened. So we really took a look at how is he living now? Is this really a problem and what can he do? So I guess the moral of the story in the conversation I said to my friend was, you do know what to do. You do know how you're feeling. And isn't that the way it always is? Even being an expert in the field, when it comes to my own family, we look at things a little different. So I encouraged her, how is he doing? What's the real problem? What can you work on now? Can you increase his physical exercise? Have you changed his diet? Are you cueing him and supporting him? What kind of things can you put into place that he might remember his credit cards more or take extra steps, right? Not to be careless with them. I think in the beginning, we really need to take a look at what's happening in life and what it is that we can do about it now. Let's face it, dementia is the long goodbye. It's a long process. And all of us are at different places in dementia. And that's what's really important. Take a look at your friend and your family member. What kinds of things can you put in place to have valuable time, to preserve memories, and not to get too frightened about the thought of dementia? Perhaps it's not even dementia. Perhaps it's another healthcare condition. And what can we do now? So I wanted to share that story with you. And I will tell you that my friend, after our conversation, had indeed told me that she had put those things in place already. She just needed to talk about it. And that's what we're going to do on this podcast. So we're going to talk about it and decide what steps you want to take to make a difference in your life and at what pace that you want to go. Obviously, I encourage getting a diagnosis, but even if you get a diagnosis, you could be disappointed or it may not be what you need at this point. That's your decision in your life as you live it. So thank you. I want to transition now to my conversation with Jim. Let me tell you a little bit about what I know about Jim and how much I enjoyed having dinner with Jim and his daughter and having a conversation in regards to his wife of 50 years. Now, I don't know the exacts about his wife, but I'll tell you, I think that she's probably a very spunky lady. I think that she had a successful career, and I feel like she's in the mid stages of dementia. Jim wrote me several questions. I believe that there are 24 questions on my list. I won't be able to get to all those questions today, but I promise you that I will cover them in future podcasts if you'll join me. But I want to talk about the situation and some of the early questions you might have as a family. There's so much out there and so much on the web, so much we can learn about diagnosis and dementia in general or Alzheimer's disease as a diagnosis. But when we really get down to it, there are probably some pretty basic questions that people have. After all, could you imagine being married for 50 years and all of a sudden look at your wife or your husband and realize that you didn't know them or they were doing things that you've never seen them do before and you really don't know why? I believe that Jim is a pretty analytical guy. I know that he does have a teaching background, and I know that he has real questions, and he's doing a great job. He really is doing a great job at working with his wife and family to live the best life that they can live. But let's get into some of these questions and begin to talk about them. So here's some of Jim's questions. How do you handle it when loved one accuses the spouse or family members of losing technology, chargers, phones, etc., when they often just cannot recall where they put it? That's a great question, Jim. And I think that it's one that many of us ask early of our spouse, even if they don't have dementia. But here's the thing, going back to some of the common early symptoms, dementia impacts how we reason, how we process things, our abstract thinking, executive thinking. And one of the things is they simply can't remember or recall things they've done recently. One of the things that they do to protect themselves, because they're insecure about these things, but they may not know why. They may not be able to put their finger on it. So it's obviously your fault. Because if I'm not in total reality, and I've never done that before, chances are I might be in a little bit of denial about that. And of course, I'm going to blame you. And that's usually what happens. remember, figuring out where something was, it really is a processing skill and something that goes away. It goes away early. Losing things, misplacing things, putting keys in places that they shouldn't go, losing your way home when you've driven that path for 20 years. These are things that are very common. And people begin to put things in peculiar places and simply they can't retrace their steps. They're unable to do that. One of the things right off I'm going to say to everyone who has that question like Jim is, I would just let it go. I would just help them make excuses. I would make them right and say to them, you know what? I'm not really sure either, but let's just look for it together. Or, you know, I've done that a lot. It's okay. We'll find it. So we really have to take the upper hand. We never want to put our loved one or individual on defense. And the minute we go questioning their ability to reason or judgment, it's going to do that. It's going to cause embarrassment. And we want to avoid that. At the end of the day, how important is that? And I think that's one of the things that I often see in many questions that I get from the family. What used to be important or valuable in relationships in the family dynamic is now something that we kind of have to put aside for now and pick our battles. Next question. How do you handle it when a loved one accuses spouse or family members and has extreme anger, catastrophic events, including accusations and threats that are unfounded, but frightening because they could ruin reputations? This is a broad question. And number one, let me answer the first part of this question. Along with ability to process things, there is a diminishment in the ability to control emotions. Catastrophic reactions can occur in the very early, even mid stages of dementia, because they can no longer control their emotions. They don't have a barometer to know when to stop. They don't know how to go from calm and not go right into angry. And you need to know and understand that. You always need to be aware of where that could be with your loved one and de-escalate the situation by making it not an issue or changing the subject. We call that redirecting. So you may say, oh, okay, how was your day today? Because processing is something that they struggle with. You can easily interject or change the subject in a very simple way that can really divert the thinking and processing process that they may be going through. Accusations and threats are just another way. They're kind of a rebound from them not being able to be in control, not really understanding what's happening, not being able to process the why behind a situation, not being able to problem solve, basically, is what we're talking about. Again, we have to constantly try and de-escalate things that are no longer important. If they are important and you have to hold the line on that, kind of be aware that you're going to get into an argumentative, maybe explosive situation. So I constantly have to remind myself, and I encourage my dementia coaching colleagues, and I encourage families when I talk to them to really, again, evaluate what's important. How important is it to solve that? And at the end of the day, it's easier if you don't, if you just let it fall and go on to something else. The other part of this that I really want to dig into is if these things are unfounded and frightening and they could ruin reputations. This is really a personal decision for families to make. And I don't think your doctor or anyone else can tell you when to make the decision. And that decision is when to tell people, when to tell the remainder of your family, when to tell friends, when to tell the general public that someone you love or a friend has dementia. It's a personal decision. But once you make that decision, then you really don't have to worry about the reputations. I think that most people know something about dementia or have an understanding of dementia, even if it's not correct, to know that if you say someone has dementia, some of the things that they might say are not going to be as noticeable, or they're going to take it more with a grain of salt than if they don't know there's changes. And how much or how little you share is really up to you. I mean, you could say something like, Mom is having some changes. We're not really sure what it is with her memory, but we're having her evaluated. So if she says something out of the blue or off color, just let it fall. And that would be a good way to put people at ease. One of the things that we have to know and understand is that people struggle with how to react or how to approach someone with dementia. So a lot of times they'll quit coming around or quit calling. They simply don't know what to do. It's not that they don't want to or that they're afraid. They don't know how to answer or how to have a conversation. And that's where helping with that or giving them ideas will be helpful. And if they know that your loved one has dementia, it's going to go a lot smoother, and they're going to let some of the stories and some of the off-color emotions fall to the ground. Next question. What if your loved one is throwing everything away that they like or want when it is just misplaced? So there must be accusing. I think the question here from Jim would be, how do you handle it when they're accusing you of throwing things away or that sort of thing, but it's just been misplaced. And here again, I'm going to go back to some of my original answers. And one of the things I think that if you think about something you've struggled with finding an answer, the thing that we look for and the thing that people look for when they have dementia is called validation. We need to validate them. And that validation is, I hear you and it's okay. We're going to figure this out together. So you don't have to say, and it's the wrong thing to say, you know, I would never do that. You know, I would never throw your stuff away. Or worse than that, you know, you've just misplaced it and you don't know where it is. You are obviously going to put your loved one on offense. Right? You're going to put them on the offense, right? Nobody wants to be accused, even if it's correct. So you really got to look at the situation. And here would be a kind of a proper thing to say is, you know, honey, I know how much that means to you. And I assure you, I would never throw away your things. I'm here with you and I'm going to help you find that. We're going to find that together no matter what. So you're really validating how they're feeling. You're validating that it's valuable to them. And you're telling them that they're not alone. You're going to help. That will de-escalate a situation 75 to 90% of the time, depending on, of course, your tone of voice and that sorts of things. And when I'm saying this, I realize this doesn't come easy. I mean, after 50 years, after 22 years, I kind of talk the same way to my husband as I have over the years. So imagine if I had to change all of that at being married 50 years. This takes practice. And I recommend that you do practice. You think about things you might say or things that might be reassuring or redirecting. You're probably going to have to practice that a while because let's face it, our fuses get short. Sometimes we answer very quickly without thinking. So I am never saying that you're wrong and you have to do it this way. I'm saying if you do it this way, things are going to go a lot smoother and you're going to get better at this as you go along. And that's really what we're talking about here. How can we minimize these battles or how can we minimize the distress that dementia or Alzheimer's disease can bring into our family lives and impact the entire family? This is a good one. And I'm not so clear on this, but let's go ahead and read it. So how do you handle it when your loved one is getting into laptops, computers, bank accounts, and taking money from an account when they do not have joint access or ownership and passwords are unknown and or your loved one refuses to share them? So I believe, let me clarify this a little bit. I believe that they are accusing the loved ones of getting in and stealing from them, getting in and taking from them, getting into their stuff, their bank accounts, their computers, all of that sort of thing. So this paranoid behavior is very common, really begins to develop when you get into the middle stages, even early mid stage. Paranoia is part of dementia, most types of dementia. And when we get paranoid about lots of things. So I think that what they're saying is they're fearful, they're not sure. And as we get later on into some of these questions that Jim has asked, let me just give you a little bit more background on his wife. Okay. So she is having some hallucinations, meaning that she's seeing things that aren't there, as well as delusions and probably some auditory hallucinations. So sometimes in some days, things are real to her that aren't real to you. This is a reality. This is how she's feeling. And again, validation is going to minimize this, not being right or wrong. Let me say for the analytical person listening, dementia is gray. It's not black and white, and it rotates and it grows as we go into the different phases of dementia. So this person, out of fear or out of lack of control or out of being able to process things, is obviously not going to say, well, I messed up, or I probably forgot that, or I transferred the money here, or I spent it, or I gave it away. So I think one of the things, again, that we're always going to talk about is reassurance. It's reassurance. And in this particular case here, we're not talking about someone who's had a diagnosis. This woman refuses to go to the doctor to get a diagnosis. So we're actually getting it, unfortunately, in a roundabout way, which is not the best way to get it. We're getting it through obvious crises that end up in the ER or getting lost, involving police and being in the ER or hospitalized and getting some neurology consults. This is an ongoing thing where we've actually gone in and got all of our testing and we know what we're dealing with. We're not there yet in this situation. And that poses a whole different issue that we're talking about here. It's really hard when someone still is having realities or they're living independently, but they're losing some of their realities. There's boundaries that children set and spouses set that we don't want to push the issue. We want them to make decisions and we want them to be themselves, be in control. And so there are boundaries there that we have to decide as a family how quickly we can move those boundaries or how quickly that we can get a diagnosis or push for that. Sometimes it gets difficult and the battle is greater than the outcome. So again, it's a great conversation to have. And I think you as a family have to decide where you're going to draw the line. Only you can do that. I can tell you, but I'm not living it. You are. I think that that's important to know. Here's one of the things that you want to do very early on. It's a good place to put it in. At some point, you're going to need to talk about guardianship. You're going to need to get an elder law attorney. You're going to need to have to put some stopgaps in place so that your loved one doesn't get scammed, lose their money, buy a car twice, all of those kinds of things, because that happens every day. There's scammers out there who scam seniors every day and they can't make good judgments. They could lose a lot of money. They could give away a lot of money. They could lose a lot of money. Start putting that in place by consulting your attorney, elder law attorney. Look at what guardianship entails so that when you're ready to move into that, you kind of know what that's going to look like. That's going to be real important. And the reason for that is that they may not go from A to B. They may go in the process from A to D. Okay. So start putting those kinds of things in place early on. Hopefully you can have that conversation long before you're at this situation, because it's just going to make it easier. But that's not always possible. Okay. Another question here from Jim. What do you do when your loved one is accusing you of rearranging items in the personal bathroom where no one else has been? Again, great question. Very great question. It's a processing reality. Things seem different. I'm not really sure what it is, the person with dementia says. So therefore, you must be rearranging things. You must be doing this to me because I can't figure it out. I'm feeling confused. They're never going to say that. I'm not really sure. They're going to go on the defensive. Again, reassurance, laugh about it, make a joke about it, offer to help, offer to fix it, How do you want it to be? I'm sorry. Oh, maybe I did move that. How can I help? How can I fix it? I'm so sorry. I won't do that again. So it really is a whole validation and really taking an emotional angle to just ease the tension, to just ease things in the room. And I think that that's going to be very helpful to you. Again, at differing degrees as you begin to use that technique. I'm not guaranteeing that they're not going to know you're bluffing. I'm not guaranteeing that at all. But I'm just saying as things go on and you begin to take that technique and begin to try and use it, I think you're going to see a little more success. So let's move on in our questions here with Jim. These are great questions, by the way, and something that only a loved one or a family member in that situation could really come up with. So great questions, Jim.
All right. How to kindly manage a situation where it's clear that someone forgot something like a doctor's appointment?
Jim, again, is analytical. And things have been important in their life. I'm sure they were both successful. And there are probably things that just never happened in their marriage or household that are now beginning to happen. And they're really hard to understand. But let's talk about the situation. Forgetfulness is the first thing that begins to happen. Short-term memory also. They met someone yesterday, but today they don't remember meeting them or can't recall the name. Again, I think reminding yourself too that this is happening. And supporting the situation, that's one of the reasons why I think it's key to be involved in some sort of support. Whether you're on a Facebook support group or whether you attend a support group or whatever the case might be, talking and dialoguing about the situation is really going to be important because you're going to realize that a lot of other people in your situation or a similar situation are in the same place. And hearing them talk about their situations, like we're going to talk about on the podcast, is going to be helpful. It is not easy over time to go, oh, yes, that's right. They can't process this. It's just not something that comes naturally to us, especially when we've been with someone for a very long time. Next question. Suddenly disappears, getting lost on the road, unable to figure out maps, what to do, in those situations when it feels like a crisis. Again, this is the common early onset dementia when people start having little safety issues here and there. They get lost driving home. They get lost going to the grocery store, going around the block. They lose their car. They lose their keys. Many of them get out of their car and just leave it sitting there, that sort of thing. So the process here I want to talk about is safety. One of the determining factors in when you need to move the boundaries is safety. If your loved one is safe and there's no real issues going on, they're not giving away money or losing money or mismanaging medication or getting lost where their life or someone else's life is at danger, these are boundary points that we need to kind of evaluate there. I know that if we talk to our police officers, that they could tell you they run into this all the time. We get on the interstates and see the silver alerts. Somebody's gotten their car and driven across the state or even across the nation. We see that a lot. So safety is one of those things that really is the stopgap. People ask all the time, when should we take the keys to the car? When should they stop driving? This is another decision that it's a personal one for the family, but it's also a safety one for people in the community and your physician. It's something that you need to start talking about as you're talking to your doctor. There is available what's called a driving eval through rehab places. And in most cities, there is a rehab center or physical occupational therapist that do what's called driving evaluations. And they get in the car with the person and they evaluate their reaction time, whether they're safe, if they make right choices. And I think that that's something you could ask your doctor about. Also, I think the other thing I'd really like to talk about here is you need to have an open and honest conversation with your doctor. You're not going to your doctor to just get basic diagnosis. If you don't have a physician who supports you through the process, I suggest you get one. And this is where a doctor would have a lot of influence in most cases, with your loved one. Police officers, a lot of people will respond to a police officer and hearing something from them, then they will from you. Doctors can begin to talk to your loved ones about safety and driving and that sort of thing. So this is a very touchy situation. And if you have the privilege of having conversations before you get well into dementia, it's something that the person themselves should kind of talk about and begin to decide when that's going to happen. Here's the thing that's not going to happen. Okay. And I need you to know this. If your loved one is in the middle stages of dementia, they can't make that decision. They're well beyond decision-making and judgment. They're not going to see themselves as unsafe. They're not going to see themselves as a threat, or they can no longer drive. They're not going to understand that they're getting lost. So again, reasoning and giving 10 reasons why you shouldn't drive, when you're in the middle stages, it's going to be met with a lot of resistance. And that's why pre-planning is very, very important when we talk about safety here. Once you get a diagnosis, please begin to talk about these hard topics. Please begin to involve family, physicians, and other healthcare professionals, because this is a hard decision. And the guilt involved with taking the car can be overwhelming. So I'm talking to the children here and even the spouse. Taking stuff from your parents when they're no longer safe is heart-wrenching. And you're going to need to get a lot of support for that and maybe talk through it. But it's something that at one point is going to have to be done. And it's something that should be done when safety is not an issue. Let's take one last question here. And then I think I'm going to wrap up the podcast for this session here. This is an analytical question, which I love this question. It goes like this. My loved one gets notes about where I am, but either refuses to read them or just ignores and makes accusations about my true whereabouts. So here again, we have two issues. We have paranoia. We have insecurity and fear. Can I trust you? Where are you? Are you having an affair? Are you really telling me the truth? And we have the expectation that the wife can process anything. We used to leave notes on the refrigerator, right? And you knew to look there. Okay. When you have dementia, even if you read it 2 minutes ago, you're not processing what it means, maybe not even applying it to the situation. And there's a time gap. So remember, we said that they can get confused about time and place. They can also get confused about situation. I think that our expectation of, I left you a note, didn't you read it? You would know where I am, versus I read it, I didn't make the application, and I can't process it, really comes into play. So again, my answer to this is reassurance. We don't want to remind someone too far in advance. Like if you tell your loved one today that tonight this is happening, it may be too far. If you tell them that tomorrow that you're going to be doing this, it also may be too far. So kind of weigh it out. How far and how long are they retaining different items, different conversations? And so here's kind of how I would approach that. Oh my goodness, I left you a note. I meant to tell you and I meant to remind you that I was going to be here. I know you're concerned about where I am. And next time, I will do something different, or I will be sure and call you, or I will take on the responsibility and offer the reassurance. And you may have to do it multiple times. Chances are that's going to be the case, that you're going to do it multiple times. That's really our response to dementia, is preparing ourselves and our phrases and our comebacks and our validations to do it multiple times. The podcast is Dementia 24/7, 365. It doesn't change. It does progress at different stages. And so I think that we really need to take a look at how we're going to act, how we're going to react, and what's really important as we go through the phases of dementia with our loved ones. I want to say thank you for watching and listening today. I hope my words have guided you closer to finding the path forward for you and your loved ones. Join me next time as we continue to explore who we are beyond our memories and lift one another up through shared experiences and heartfelt conversations. Together, let's live our best lives and find joy along the journey. Until next time, I'm Dawn Platt, and this is Dementia 24/7, 365. Make it a memorable day.
Thank you for joining us for the Disappearing Mind podcast. We hope it's helped you find clarity and support along your journey. Be sure to subscribe to never miss an episode, visit our website to suggest future topics, and share the podcast with friends and family.